Good afternoon. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Tom Crum from Aspen. Tom is an Aikido master, coach, teacher, and remembered as John Denver's friend. Welcome, Tom. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Will. How are you? Great to be here.
If we look around outside, all of nature, the creatures, plants, and trees are standing tall. Is that the way you see it?
Well, it would be wonderful if that were the case, if standing tall means standing up for our highest purpose. I mean, clearly an aspen tree knows only to be an aspen tree, so it does everything it can to stay tall. So everywhere in nature, things are as authentic and full as they can be. Humans, I think, given consciousness, have a choice. And I think we have evolved, maybe not as far as we want to this point in time, and so many aren't really standing tall yet. Hopefully, we'll become more awake as a species, and we need to. We'll have 9 billion of us by 2050. We need to have a great percentage become awake very quickly.
But in each of us, there's this unique bundle of potential and artistic creativity. Whether it's activated is up for a question.
Right. Absolutely. I think it's in the potential for everybody, if the basic survival needs are there, to become awake. I think one of our biggest problems is we don't use the entire mind and body and spirit as we could. We're not as centered as we could. In other words, we're not as mindful of what's going on. We have a limited capacity at this point to get stuck in just the rational, linear thinking mind, and we forget the open mind, the mind of wonder, the creative mind. And it appears that even from brain research that to get really creative and to open compassion and empathy, which are certainly skills we need in today's crazy world, we need to go to deeper recesses. In other words, we need to become quieter. We need to, as Henry David Thoreau said, not be so quick of pace. He said that and this was way back in the 1800s, he said a man riding a horse a mile a minute doesn't bring the most important messages. So I think to really open our capacity up, we have to have more of a practice that gets us more present, more mindful.
And one of the other challenges is how we respond to conflict, because many of us contract and withdraw when we're confronted with stress and we actually get smaller. And bullies, of course, like it when we shrink and they can run over us.
Absolutely. Conflict is one of the most misunderstood problems in the world. Most of us react to conflict as if it were a contest, and that's the first major myth that we have to break. Conflicts are not contests. In fact, the best opportunity we've ever had to become more of who we are, to move into a greater relationship. I mean, you look at the Grand Canyon, which so many of us from the valley have been down. It's one of the most beautiful creations on the planet. What did it take? Eons and eons of conflict, water and breaking against rock and wind, all of it combining together. It's constant conflict to create that beauty. That's myth number one. The second myth that keeps us from really seeing conflict as an opportunity is we think conflict is negative. We're constantly... You know, you'd think we'd be more conscious than your average oyster. But when a little piece of sand gets in the oyster shell, the oyster doesn't run into one part of the shell and pretend that the irritant isn't there, nor does the oyster hire its litigation team and spend millions of dollars and incredible amounts of time trying to get rid of the irritant. And instead, it wraps its way around it. It embraces it. It brings it into its core. And that's where real pearls get formed. And probably the third myth, besides seeing conflict as a contest and seeing conflict as negative, is that we think it takes both sides to begin the resolution process. I'm not going to move one step forward until she does. I'm not going to move one step forward as a country until that country does. When, in fact, it only takes one person to begin the process. You know, it's just like if I make a fist, pushing on your fist, the tendency is for you to push back. If I push 30 pounds, for you to push back 30 plus X to maintain your what? Your position. And while you're sitting there explaining, while you're pushing, if I start to take a amount of pressure off, you spontaneously start to take pressure off. It only takes one person to begin the process, and most of us don't have the courage to step and up and be that one person. And so we need to do this. The skills to resolve conflict are there, but they require certain principles and techniques to not only be understood but to be practiced.
Is your identity at the root of your abilities to do this? Your unique voice and the gifts you bring isn't that inherent in your ability to let off the pressure and allow someone to also have the choice of letting off the pressure?
Sure. I mean, for me, my life has been about the mind-body arts. You know, when you're in conflict, when you're in stress, when you're under pressure, it's not an intellectual exercise, is it? I mean, everything's involved. Your heart's involved, your gut's involved, and your cerebral cortex are involved. So you can't really learn this and be good at it in just a mental protocol. You're not going to learn this in an academic situation. Everything needs to be looked at, the mind, the body, and the spirit. My life is, you know, I've devoted it to mind-body arts, and specifically the martial arts has been a great influence in my life, and particularly the art of Aikido, an art I've taught for nearly 40 years.
Right.
And that, along with other martial arts, has taught me that there are certain things you can take off the mat into daily life, and the world doesn't seem to get it yet. One is you've got to be able to acknowledge your situation. I mean, clearly, if you're facing a physical adversary and a punch or a grab is coming, instead of the typical reaction of resisting, fighting back, or running away, you learn to move offline but maintain connection to the adversary. Therefore, you're able to use their energy. Acknowledging a situation requires a great state of calm and mindfulness. Most people do not do the necessary training to get that, and they could. It's daily, simple training. A second aspect is being able to embrace the situation, to bring it into what you really care about. If we could create dialogues that are deeper than just who gets to be right on a particular issue, but to have the dialogue itself be an opportunity to take us both to what we care about, we would find deep human common ground. No matter what culture you're in, everybody wants to have meaningful work, wants to be in community, wants to have a sense of family. This is what we all care about. Dialogues in which we differ need to be deep enough to take us to what we really care about, and that's where you'll find common ground. And the third aspect that I find on the mat in the martial arts, but also in daily conflicts, is a willingness to change. Which means, you know, if someone comes to me and they say, "Tom, I've got a conflict with Will," and I say, "Well, yeah, really? Tell me what needs to happen." Who do you think they're going to talk about? They're all going to talk about you. You know, do we collude to get you, Will, to change?
To behave the way they want me to.
Exactly. And then all our conflict, quote, resolution becomes about trying to get Will to change. When in fact, if you look at the martial arts and you look at real powerful resolutions, we need to be willing to change. We need to recognize that by acknowledging the situation and embracing it, the change needs to happen. Change is a good thing, and it starts with us. These qualities, acknowledge, embrace, be willing to change, it's what the world needs to get. And to do that, you know, you need to start with basic principles. How does one get centered? How does one literally maintain an inquiring, discovering attitude? How does one move from just an anger over an issue into what they really care about?
And I know that one of the fundamentals that you've said before is separation is an illusion. So we all stand in total connection to all creation.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if I just... what I used to do in various workshops is I'd come up on the board, and a whiteboard, and draw a big curved line and stand to one side of it, and so that it was a concave look, and say, can everyone see this concave line? And I say, if, you know, everyone obviously recognizes that. Then I move to the other side, and I say, can everyone see this convex line? And people, of course, can see that. But most of us find ourselves not having a perspective to see the connection. It cannot be a concave line without a convex line from another perspective. Both are included in the whole. And to be fully in a defensive posture over one side is to miss the point.
Yes, and we know that when we contract and our breathing tightens up and grows shallow, we can get tunnel vision and lose the ability to see that connectivity in the big picture.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the whole clear concepts of center is it's not a mystical idea. Getting centered is simply periodically throughout the day practicing it. So you develop it like a skill of a musician or an athlete. And one thing you can do periodically throughout the day is align the body. That's one nuance of center. An aligned body allows gravity to flow through oneself. Gravity is a principle in the universe, and it's within us. An aligned body allows us to pull tension out, gravity to pull tension out. And from that aligned body, if we can just have and it doesn't take time, it just takes intention, have an awareness on our breath, we'll find that just a quiet awareness of our breathing, it will naturally get more diaphragmatic. It will have a pace. It will have a rhythm. It will have even a sound to it. But if you just sit with it and witness it, it'll get deeper, fuller, softer, more diaphragmatic. And from this aligned state of letting tension be pulled out, allowing our mind to come to this present moment breath, which gets more diaphragmatic, then we can begin to take in what is around us in a very mindful way. We can breathe in this present moment. The colors will change. The sense of sound will even change. Everything will become more alive and deepen. You'll start to see more. You'll be more present than your little position of anger, your little position of upset. And you will notice that there will be a shift. You may not notice this, but there will be a shift from that emotional reaction that people get stuck in conflict in the area of the midbrain and the amygdala, that will shift into a more calmer, rational perspective. So you get more of the whole brain involved instead of just the emotional aspect or just the judging aspect. And that whole brain experience that comes from centered practice is what we need when we are in conflict, when we're having difficulty with relationships, when we're having difficulty from nation to nation. And it is a skill that is not seemingly not out there and taught, and yet you could do it every day, what I'm talking about. You could develop the skills. Our politicians certainly could benefit from having this skillful method of centering.
They certainly could.
Yeah.
So when you expand into conflict at your highest potential, you're acting from a place of total connection on behalf of all life, not just your small self.
And that's the beautiful thing about the choice we have as human beings. We can either be in an expansive state or we can be in a contracted state. And I'm talking about an energetic contraction. You know what it's like when you walk into a room and the person you are working with or living with is contracted that day. You can feel it. They don't have to say anything.
Right.
Even the dogs and the pets, the flowers, everything sort of shrinks from this contracted state. And it certainly affects everything we're doing. On the other hand, to know that we have a choice of getting centered and just expanding. In other words, literally, our body ceases to become this separate thing from the rest of the universe. We literally expand energy. You can feel it. A person who's very happy, a person who's got real purpose, a person who has compassion, it extends into the whole room. They've done wonderful studies on that, how one person walking into a room with a lot of joy, what affects that entire room versus a person walking into that same room that's upset or contracted. Having that training, knowing that tweaking our mindset to our highest purpose is something we need to do once one gets centered, Why don't we just take a moment from this more centered place to just ask ourselves, what's my highest purpose right now? If we did, we'd be far less reactive and far more appropriate in our activities. And that highest purpose might change. You know, if you're driving to work, you might get centered over a red light, call it a centering light now, over that time of centering, which is a useful time rather than the anxious time that we usually spend at a red light, we might say, you know, my highest purpose when I go to work today is to be a team player, to be creative, to have a lot of energy. Well, you know, when you breathe those qualities in at that red light, you are setting yourself up in the mindset to actually have those qualities start to get exhibited once you're at work. What most of us do, we just carry around contracted thoughts, thoughts of negativity, thoughts of problems, thoughts of I'll never get enough done, thoughts of beating ourselves or others up.
Right.
This contracted thinking is something that we can change. Gandhi said it. You know, Gandhi said, I never let anybody walk through my mind with dirty feet. What a fantastic quote that is.
Yes. So there's a risk that I've observed in talking to people about standing tall and stepping into conflict, and that there are some people who were victims, Tom. When they realized they could stand up, they went to becoming a bully.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it's because their standing up is very limited. Their standing up comes from a contracted place of me, a place of now I get to have my revenge. I get to have, it's my turn now. That's a whole different state than Bucky Fuller would state, which is making the world work for everyone. In fact, making the world work for not just the people on this planet now, but all living things for future generations without disadvantage to anyone. That's a far higher purpose than a person that's coming from anger, upset, revenge, which is a contracted state. And that's one of the big problems we have with the movements in society for change. Environmentalists become totally upset and literally put up a dividing wall between them and ranchers, say, or loggers, say. And it's only because they haven't looked deep enough into no disadvantage for anyone, what is possible here, in which we all get to what we care about, which is a continual prosperity over time. And we need to get there. Otherwise, this standing up becomes just as divisive as the bully that was suppressing them.
Right. I know you say that the true martial art is love.
Oh, absolutely. That's a Master Wishiba was the founder of Aikido. That was his whole premise, which really blew everyone away. In fact, in the early part of the 20th century, when he developed his art, he was a farmer. He was a great martial artist, but he was also a farmer. People had heard about his great skill, and one particular commander of the army in Japan challenged him to a duel, and he, of course, had his sword, and the Master Wishiba had nothing, and he kept disarming the commander. The commander sort of eventually just bowed and said, please teach me. And he said, well, the teaching is simple. It's the art of love. If I can't be in a state of feeling one with you, I can't respond to your movements appropriately. I'm too busy protecting me. When I'm fully clearly recognizing that we're all one, if you will, I'm able to perceive a quality or an energetic impulse of movement before the actual physical movement. So I'm able to do things correctly. All of us have performed, you know, in this town there's a lot of skiing. You know, when you do any athletic event well, you ski a ski run well, there's something different. The state you're in is more connected. It's more at one with that particular run, that particular mountain, that particular day. And it's a wonderful feeling, that feeling of a zone.
It sure
and
is.
What is that but love, that deep level of connection?
Yeah. So some years ago, Tom, you declared an intention to make your life a work of art in addition to a success. And my sense is the success came. But what are you creating now?
That's a great great question. I have no clue. You know, I do my life as it unfolds. What I love about my life is it keeps showing up differently year by year. I don't have my calendar for next year, for instance, I think is empty, but suddenly it gets filled up. It gets filled up by people recognizing that what I do might be useful. They call me and I respond to that, you know, whether I'm working with, the Navy SEALs or an environmental organization. It really doesn't seem to matter. People are all coming from the same place. They want a sense of meaning in their life, and so do I. So my work is still always around what most interests me, is how do I become awake and how do I support others in becoming awake. It's an endless process.
Yes.
So, and how it unfolds, whether it's a book, you know, the three books I've written, I seem to write a book every 10 years, so a 10-year period is coming up here, so maybe that's in the cards. If I get up every day and I spend some time sitting by myself in meditation or in breathing exercise, a combination, I get a clear impulse of what needs to be done now. So I don't try to overly structure it so that I miss the wonder. You know, Rachel Carson, the great environmentalist, said, "You must have an indestructible sense of wonder." and I think that's the key, is to have an indestructible sense of wonder. You look at the great people in this valley. There's so many people in this valley that seem to have that vitality. Klaus Obermeier comes to mind.
Yes.
A man of immense vitality in his 90s. And if you were going to look at how does he have that, well, just look at his sense of wonder and that mindset that he brings, that energized, engaged mindset that comes from a sense of wonder.
This is William Evans. I'm speaking with Tom Crum, the author of The Magic of Conflict, published 25 years ago and still being read with much appreciation. And still available, right, Tom?
Absolutely. A Journey to Center and 3 Deep Breaths are my two latest books also, that they're all complementary.
Right. Say more about how you've built in an automatic honoring of the energy, an aggressive energy, a bully bearing down on you.
Well, you know, what I see, what I invite everyone to look at when they face an adversary of any kind, is that they need to wake up to the awareness that usually, if it's a bullying, aggressive nature, it's full of fear. That person is full of fear. That organization is full of fear. A person in fear, I want to respond to with a lot more compassion than I think if I had the attitude that this person is just out to hurt me. That person is coming from a state of fear, a state of not getting what they want, a state of great sadness in their life. When I see that, I know that that's something that needs to be responded to in a different way. If we could see everybody, it's just sort of like in the martial arts. I say, you know, if you had a bunch of four-year-olds rushing at you in a wrestling kind of match, you notice how you could throw them all around it, but at the same time, make sure they're supported, a hand on the back of their head so they don't hit their head, you'd be incredibly soft but incredibly fluid.
Right.
Because you'd have a compassion and understanding that they're little kids growing up. When I see bullies, I see scared little kids still trying to grow up and they don't know how. That in itself allows me to treat them like you treat compassionately a four-year-old, whether it's verbal or emotional. That's still the basic state of the bully, fearful, scared, needing some esteem.
And I've heard you acknowledge that every day there's a moment where you don't stand tall. Tell us about how you learn from those experiences by replaying and repatterning the events so you get closer to your highest potential.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not perfect. I don't know of anybody that I've met thus far in life that is perfect. We need to, as we fall down, we stand up, we step forward, we fall down. We need to have a practice daily that I think we can reflect on the learning. The learning is huge. In fact, I don't think if I were to ask anybody out there who may be listening to this, tell me about one of your most important achievements, one of the times you really stepped forward and made a difference, when you really felt a sense of meaning and purpose. And then, of course, everyone might have a moment like that, and I say, what happened prior to that? And usually it's some failing that happened, a falling down is a much better word to use than failing. There was an experience that happened that was very difficult, might have even been extremely traumatic, which set them on a path to standing up in a far more meaningful way. So the ability to reflect on those times of falling, those times where we're not standing up, that's when we can do some of our best learning. And that is also doesn't mean just about falling. It means about taking time every day to sit and let the teaching happen from other than your rational, intellectual brain. Let the thinking happen from the big mind. And that's meditation, prayer, whatever, the listening aspect of prayer, whatever one wants to call it, I think is a very, very useful practice that people should definitely look into.
Time has flown, Tom. We're out of time.
Well, that's good. We can do something else.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Will. Thank you for the work you're doing.
It's been fun, Tom. This is KDNK. You've been listening to Shifting Gears and a conversation with Tom Crum.